every guitar asks for the string that it asks for. For me, I'm looking for clarity. And I've tried everything I can get my hands on. But everything for me has always been within the D'Addario family. It's like the litmus test.
Hey y'all, like and subscribe and you won't miss any of this great content coming your way. Now, back to the rundown.
Let's do it.
Mateo, so good to see you, man.
Thank you. Thanks so much. It's an honor to be here.
Yeah, well, so we are in the Sinnery Winery in Nashville, Tennessee. This is Mateo Mancuso, and man, I've been following your work for years, and it's just amazing to see you play in real life, man. It's
thank you. Thanks so much.
So tell me, I've seen you on that guitar a lot.
Yeah,
and this is, I haven't seen you with this, and I love the way on your new, I've seen this in your new single. Tell me about this guitar.
Well, this is it's fairly new because I got it probably 2 or 3 months ago. So I'm still kind of getting used to it. And I wanted to have a Pacifica with the same kind of sunburst color as the Revstar because it's my favorite. I'm kind of a traditional guy.
Sure.
So I wanted to have this Vega trem here.
Yeah, so you're really using that whammy bar a lot.
Yeah, it's kind of the new toy, you know, when you have the whammy bar and then you're using even too much sometimes.
It's kind of
I'm getting used to it. And of course, we have tons of tunes during the concert where, of course, you have to use the whammy bar. We do have kind of a tribute to Jeff Beck, so it's really good to have the whammy bar in those cases. And then, of course, this is a custom version of the Pacifica Professional that they have in stock. Always Yamaha, of course. Yeah. I have DiMarzio pickups here.
Okay.
I think those two are called Area 68.
Oh, yeah, sure. Area 68, yes.
Yeah. And this one, it's a PAF 36th anniversary. It's basically the same configuration there as well. Those two are two puffs as well. And of course, 5-blade switch. I have 5-position, like the regular Strat. Locking tuners, because I'm a really lazy guy. I don't want to spend too much time changing strings, so I have locking tuners on both.
Sure.
And that's pretty much it. Yeah.
And what strings are you using?
These are 9s 42, if I remember correctly. I prefer to use 9s on like Strat style, and 10s on like Les Paul kind of guitars. And both are Dogal strings. They are handmade strings from Venice in Italy. And they are incredible strings. I find myself really well. That's pretty much it. Yeah. Huh.
Okay, and rosewood fingerboard.
Rosewood fingerboard, yeah.
Yeah. In the body, we were kind of trying to decide maybe ash.
Maybe ash. I should ask the luthier because it looks like ash, but I'm not quite sure. But yeah, I trust you.
So. Yeah. So when you were talking, you've been with Yamaha for a long time now, right?
Yeah, I started with them, I think in 2017.
Oh, really?
So it's quite a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, and so you've. You were on that, the Revstar, forever, and then this is the new edition. And are they both on the album, on the new?
Yeah, maybe this one is more on the album, because as I said before, it was the new toy. So I started to record a lot of stuff with this one as well. Yeah. But of course, I used the Revstar as my principal guitar, let's say.
Sure.
But this is a guitar I also used on the only single that came out before this tour that is called Isla Feliz.
Oh yeah, I love that. And you start on that classical piece. So you're not touring with you don't bring the classical out for the tour?
No. I'm limiting myself to two guitars now.
Good idea. With an international travel, hard to carry a lot of gear.
Yeah, it's very hard to travel and I prefer to travel light. As you can see,
Dan, this is probably the most sparse rig rundown ever. Two guitars. one pedal.
cord. I apologize to all the analog fans out there, but I, 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 I prefer to, you know, travel light and bring the things that I know better, you know,
sure.
Because I don't like to change too much. So
now, when you're recording, are you using amps on the recording, or are you using this rig as well?
Well, on recording, it's kind of a different thing because I likely have a father that likes analog amps.
Yeah, and your father's a great musician and producer and engineer as well. All those things.
He's also an incredible guitar player, and I had the chance from when I was a little kid. It was kind of a Luna Park inside the house, you know, like I had all the amps available. We have the Marshall JCM 800 at home that I recorded. I wanted to experiment, talking about the last record, with recording just one song with all analog gear and like see what happens with the comparison with all these machines. And I think there's one song that is not out yet that where I recorded everything with just analog amps because I wanted to, you know, test what happens. And it's far easier if you are on a controlled environment, let's say.
Oh, sure.
You have all the time in the world because I have the lucky that I have my own home studio. So you can spend a lot of time miking up the amps and everything. But on live settings, as I said before, I'm a really lazy guy, so I want to have like the fastest thing that I can play. And but it was a good experiment, so at least I know what it feels like.
Okay, so what did you come away with that experiment when you took all that time to get the perfect analog signal and then compare it to your digital signal? Did you find there was much of a difference? Or?
Well, I think that the starting point is different. Like with analog stuff, the starting point is already a good sound.
Yes.
And then you tweak it a little bit.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, with the digital, you have to work a little bit more on it. Like if you have a stock preset on the Helix or usually whatever digital machine you have, you need to tweak a lot before you achieve the sound you want.
Sure.
Meanwhile, with amps, once you know the amp, that's pretty much it. And then you tweak a little bit with the EQ and that's it. I mean, so I think that's the main difference. And then the feeling of having an amp on the stage, I think it's irreplaceable, you know?
Right, it's so inspiring just to feel that.
Yeah, I always say like, you don't need to confuse this, like, how it sounds and how it feels, because it will always be so much different.
Yeah.
And because we play with in-ears, we have backing tracks for some of the songs, so we need to have in-ears because we have a click for some of the songs. So I was kind of forced to play with in-ears in this kind of situation. I'm not necessarily a big fan of it because I think it's a little bit harder to play with in-ears.
Sure. There's a disconnect.
You are a little bit more disconnected from the crowd, but once you get used to it, it's a good feeling as well, let's say. The sound, you can pretty much, especially talking about the machines we have today, you can pretty much achieve every sound you have in your head if you know very well the machine you are using. So
sure. Hey everybody, I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. So, as many of you know, D'Addario has been a longtime friend of PG, sponsoring Rig Rundowns, and they're a longtime friend of all the players with their Players Circle Rewards. I've been using it for years, and essentially, they will reward you for the gear you buy. Open it up, look inside, and there's a reward number. It's free and easy to sign up for. And as soon as you sign up, you immediately get some reward points just for putting your name in. After a while, you accumulate enough where you can buy more of this fantastic D'Addario gear. So as a Players Circle Rewards member, you get discounts on custom products and merch, you get free shipping, and you get a discount on the gear you're buying with your points or free gear, depending on that. And if you're charitable, you could donate your Players Reward points for musical education. So collect those points, buy the great gear, and let's get back to more rundowns. Now, one thing I've always been curious about, tell me about this. How did you get into the scrunchy, the mute like that, and how do you use it throughout the gig?
Well, that was basically I wanted to do because sometimes I use really heavy distortions, you know, so if I have to play with a sound like I can mute the strings if I'm playing with this position, but whenever I have to play with this position, my palm is up here, so I cannot do the palm muting stuff. So
it's almost like a flamenco type.
Yeah, it's kind of a flamenco type. Yeah, it's kind of a mix between, let's say, bass guitar and classical flamenco kind of stuff. So because I have the palm here, I'm not able to mute the strings at the same time. So this comes in up whenever I have to play some lines with this position. So, and also with the tapping stuff as well. If I play like this helps to mute the strings a little bit more, let's say.
Yeah, but keeps you from having the open strings.
Yeah, that's why sometimes I do like
this
kind of movement.
Yeah,
sometimes.
You move so quickly, but you're adjusting that on the fly.
Yeah,
it's, you know, I guess I have the same thing that everybody's kind of asking since they've seen you is, how did you come up with this technique? Was it, was it like classical that kind of got into it, or?
Well, there was a mix between, actually, I started with the electric guitar. Many people thought that I started with the classical
because
of the finger style, but I actually started with the electric because the music I was listening to back when I started, I was probably 10 years old or something, and I was listening AC/DC, Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, all these kind of guys.
The best music ever.
Yeah, all the traditional like 70s rock bands. Yeah. They were my introduction to guitar, so I was always more attracted to electric rather than the classical guitar. So I started with electric like that because I saw my father playing with fingers at home. And I just thought that every guitar was meant to be played like that. I didn't know that you should use a pick for electric and fingers with classical guitar. So I just thought, okay, I just play wherever it's comfortable to me. And when I discovered about the pick, it was too late. Like, I didn't want to start again, you know?
Sure.
So that was the reason. And then I kept, of course, practicing. I borrowed a lot of things from the classical world as well. And classical guitar helped me a lot to achieve the technique I have now, of course, but I was always more fascinated about the electric world.
Yeah, okay. Well, can we hear this one compared to your Revstar a little bit?
Sure.
Yeah, I'd love to kind of do like a little taste test.
Well, that's my main lead sound, let's say. I have a little boost here if I want a little bit more sustain, let's say.
Yeah. And what unit is this that we're listening to?
This is the new HX Stadium XL,
okay.
Elite Stadium. The only difference between the Stadium and the XL one is that I also have the volume pedal available here. Then I have, these ones are called snapshots, basically, and they're kind of preset on the same kind of page, let's say. So I mainly have four sounds. This is the lead as I played before. This is the crunch channel. And this is basically the same amp. I think it's a simulation of a Marshall JTM-50, if I remember correctly. And then I have a couple of distortion pedals behind. And then I have a clean effects, if I had to do some kind of Alan Allsworth kind of chords.
Oh yeah, it's dreamy. So like on these basic sounds, did you start with the presets and then tweak them from there, or do you just start with a blank canvas?
I usually start with a preset.
Yeah.
And if I like the preset, I usually, of course, try to tweak it a little bit, but I always start by, my rule is that I don't want to EQ anything. Like, it needs to be just like the amp as it is, and I don't want to, let's say, to color too much the sound of the amp, let's say.
Yeah.
And then I usually, like, my trick for this kind of digital machines is that I always have to have an eye cut on the cabinet section, because as you can see here, I have, of course, the cabinet simulation, and you can high cut or low cut the cabinet section.
Right.
And the low cut is always below 100 hertz because it's the territory of the kick drum and the bass, so I don't want to be on that kind of...
Yeah, just find your little sonic space.
Yeah, and they usually cut through, the high cut is on 5,000 or 6,000 because you get rid of the fizzle of the typical digital stuff, you know?
Yeah, you're right, it's that digital kind of tinniness that's
up
there.
Yeah,
yeah. So you just start by taking those out.
Yeah, I take those out immediately. That's basically the first thing I do about equalization on digital sounds. I cut between like 5 or 6K and then a low cut on 100 hertz, basically. And I do that on all the amps I use. And then, as I said before, this is the clean. And it's basically, I think it's a Fender. Here it's called the US Lux Black.
Okay.
Because they can't use the real name.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I have a 2x12 Jazz Revac cabinet with different mics. I usually do like, because you can use two cabinets, but I use the same cabinet with two different microphones, basically.
You know, growing up in the studio like you did, I bet that really helps just in your programming and everything like that.
Well, but because I think if you know analog gear, here you have a lot of advantages.
Sure.
And back when I started, I didn't know all those names because I don't know many of the analog stuff because I started with digital.
Yeah.
And that was a disadvantage at the start because I didn't even know the names of the amps, and I didn't know what was the real counterpart.
Yeah.
So I slowly like took some lessons on the internet, you know?
Yeah, sure. That's what we did, University of YouTube.
University of YouTube. That actually helped me a lot. Even watching all the Regret Nouns.
Thank you.
So that was the start. I always start with a stock preset, and I just, you know, juggle things around, let's see what happens. So far I'm satisfied with the sounds. I basically built this preset 1 week before the tour started.
Oh, really?
So I'm still tweaking some stuff, but right now I'm satisfied with the sounds,
Now tell me about this secondary box over there, the Line 6.
Yeah, this is the Alex Stomp. I only use it as a backup in case this one doesn't work.
Oh, right.
Luckily it never happened. But you never know, so I always have that one.
Yeah, well, that's the rule of touring. You never know.
Yeah,
when it's not gonna work.
Yeah, you always need to have a backup. That's why I have two guitars. Actually, that was the main reasons. Basically the same sound you hear here uploaded on the other.
Wow.
Pedal boards.
Yeah, that is traveling light. So speaking of the new toy, the Whammy, that's the Vegatrem?
Yeah, that's the Vegatrem.
Those are great.
Yeah. I know the Vegatrem guys since, I don't really know when we started collaborating together, but I was really fascinated by the tremolo because it was kind of small compared to the other ones.
Sure.
And the first time I tried it, it was kind of more stable compared to all the tremolos that I tried so far. So I just thought, let's try it on the custom Pacifica, let's see what happens. And I remember one of the first tricks I learned was kind of this.
Oh, yeah.
You know, all the like the kind of the
Steve Vai. Jeff Becky, Steve Vai.
Yeah, kind of stuff.
And hey, Vai is on your new album, right? How was that?
Wow, that was amazing.
I bet.
It was a dream come true. I mean,
where did you record? Did you record at his place, or how did it work?
No, we recorded on distance because he was busy with the with the Such By band, and he was touring a lot at that time.
You just sent him the track, and he.
I just sent him the track, and he was incredibly fast at recording it. Yeah. I remember that there was like a brief exchange of emails. And maybe, I don't know, 2 weeks after I already had the take.
Yeah.
So it was like incredibly fast at doing it. And I was really happy because, you know, you don't take for granted that these big players are so available.
Yeah.
So that was really a life-changing moment to me.
Oh my God,
And the song, like, is not out yet, but it will come out before the album. The album will come out on April 24th, so we will release some single material, let's say, before the album will come out. And I wanted to do the most Steve Vai song I could ever imagine, you know, so a lot of whammy bar tricks and a lot of stuff. And of course, Steve's solo is mind-blowing, and I think...
He's incredible.
He kind of added a new dimension to the song that I didn't even imagine. So yeah, I'm very proud of that work, and I can't wait for the release.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it. Yeah, to hear the two of you guys together. So that was the first whammy bar trick. The back. I saw you do a full-on dive bomb.
I do it sometimes with this kind of stuff, you know.
You know. That is so Steve Vai, right?
You'll
pick it up by the whammy.
Of course. And then, you know, if I have to play, of course.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I do it sometimes if I have to do... I'm a big fan of Scott Anderson, for example, so I thought some of the vocabulary and that kind of whammy bar action, I took it from Scott as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so trying to experiment with it is...
Well, when you... Now that you're... Are you playing this one more than the Revstar, now that you're...
If I have to be honest, yes. I'm playing this one a little bit more than the Revstar. But if I have to play with a clean sound, I mostly play with the Revstar.
Okay.
So I can show it to you.
Yeah, let's hear that thing. That's the funny thing about a whammy bar, though. Once it becomes part of your thing, you'll miss it.
You'll miss it.
When you pick up the other guitar and it's like, oh.
It actually happened to me when I was playing this one and I was just searching for the whammy bar when I was improvising.
Right.
Yeah, thanks. So this one, as you can see also on the other guitar, I have this kind of plastic thing
in
between the
about?
Pickups. And this is just to hold my thumb here if I'm playing. So if I have this kind of stuff, I always play with this position here. It's good to hold my thumb. So it's a little bit more comfortable to me to play.
Is that something Yamaha put in, or did you do that yourself?
Yeah, they put it in. I asked them for just a piece of plastic the same color as the pick guard.
It's almost like on a bass, on a jazz bass, they've got that little...
Yeah, I think bass player, they call it the finger ramp or something similar. So, and then this one I use it for some of the clean stuff as well. For example, if I have to start Isla Feliz, I usually...
Oh, that is so great.
And it's kind of have this kind of... to have this kind of jazz sound.
So great.
So this one is more for that kind of stuff. So as you can see, I have the jazz snapshot.
Just to make it clear, that's what you do at jazz. So this is a, so the Revstar is a mahogany back maple top and rosewood fingerboard?
Yeah, I think this one is called Paul Ferro.
It's kind
of a substitute.
Yeah.
And other than that, I have also the five-blade switch here, but I don't really use it that much, to be honest. I only use, like, you know, for the jazz stuff, the neck pickup, and for my distortion, the bridge pickup as well. I rarely use distortion with the neck pickup because I always thought it sounds too muddy and dark. That's basically it. Locking tuners here as well. The only thing that this guitar doesn't have compared to that one is that the glowing dots. I don't have glowing dots here, so whenever like in the stage there's dark, with this guitar I always have to be 100% sure of the next chord, let's say. But with that guitar it doesn't happen. So one thing that I would like to have here, maybe glowing dots.
Okay, listen up, Yamaha. Next time, glowing dots.
Yeah, glowing dots. I can't play without glowing dots.
Cutting that maple is so beautiful.
Yeah, it's really amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, Mateo, it's such a pleasure to get to meet you and hear you play. I mean, watching you play, it's like magic, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So, new single's out right now, Isla Feliz. The album coming out in April.
Yeah.
And with the Steve Vai single coming up soonish.
Oh, sorry, the single already came out.
Isla.
Isla already came
out.
Yeah,
Isla's out, but the Vai thing, is that going to be a single?
The Vai thing is going to be, I don't know if I can say it.
Okay, but it's coming.
But it's coming, yeah.
Falls, and you're on the road in the States for how many shows are you doing in the States?
Well, the last gig will be in Chicago on February 27th.
Oh, wonderful.
So I will go back in Italy on like March 1st or, yeah.
Great.
Pretty long tour, yeah.
Yeah, well, hey man, congratulations.
Thank you.
Love your work, great hearing you play. Check them out.